And of course, the author's remark is that once you have a subset satisfying the conditions, then the associativity law of all domains, because it's called G, and every element of H has an inverse in H, and the identity in H, so H is out of the group. Hence the name. Okay, so I want to prove a little grammar. Handy and useful. Very easy, but if HI, INI is a collection of subgroups of G, of group G, then the intersection of all this. So if you take a whole bunch of subgroups and intersect them all, sometimes you see the following notation for a subgroup. So if it's a subset of a subgroup, people write like this. I try to avoid, with the less than or equal sign. I try to avoid that because when I'm writing on the blackboard, my left equal size is identical to my subset sign. So, this one I was being very careful, right? Those things are different. This is a subset and that's a subgroup. But, so I usually write in a certain book. Yeah. If you're typing, then you can make sure that this sign is this one. I'm writing fast, it's not here. Likewise, if you want to use this notation when you're writing an exam or writing homework, make sure that it's distinctive, right? So that's how it's confusing. Okay, so proof is easy. And I also put some property 1 for each of them implies that X times Y is an X times Y, which by the tissue of intersection is X Y. So right, so the first implication is the definition of intersection, second implication is the definition of subgroup, applied to each of the HI, and the third implication is intersection. So you get the intersection plus by that, and then 2 or 3 of them. Okay, what about so that's the lemma, and then I want to make a definition. Then the intersection obtaining X, so that's a subgroup because of the lemma, right? Because you take an intersection of subgroups, of some subgroups, subgroups that contain this, right? It's called the subgroup. Generated by X and the notice. Let me just make a remark, because you have like when you write a subgroup generated by a finite set, you usually omit the fully graphs. Often I'm just gonna write. I don't want to prove a theorem about this thing. So, everybody has any subset, because you can take this subgroup, because you can look at all the possible subgroups that contain this set, and take the intersection of all of them. That's going to be a subgroup, because of the lemma, and in fact it's going to be the smallest subgroup that contains the set, right? Because is intersection, so anything small can develop to something small. So every subset has the smallest subgroup of the group that contains. Sometimes the smallest subgroup that contains X is the whole G. You don't get anything smaller than so it's actually X and G, you say that X generates so for example you take the integers under addition generated by 1, right? Small group that contains number 1 is the whole G, right? But it contains 1, it contains 2, it contains 3, it contains 4, and so on. It contains, yes, it contains the inverse, so it contains minus 1. It contains the integers, and the MD, and the by N. Ah, by the way, it's also generated by minus 1. Generated by minus 1. For an example of a group with more than one generator, we can go through. If you want some examples of the groups generated by the subset of the whole thing, set generated by 1, 0. So there's no Zeekos, right? In Zeekos, the integers, the 1, 0 is the set of N, 0. The thing generated by the smallest, so you can check, how would you check that? You can prove that there's a group and it contains that. And you can also, if a group contains this guy, it contains all the smallest. So here's a theorem, and maybe I'll talk a little bit
be more clear and popular term how you go about identifying what the good advice has is that if X is in G, then the group generated by X is can be written as the collection of all the products from I to 1 to N of Xi. So all products of all lengths, so so it's the collection of all the products you can make with elements in X, with Xi belong to X, or Xi inverse belong to X, and N is any number greater than 0. So what's the product from 1 to 0? Okay, so that's a convention. The convention, so when I use the notation, so I have to force the identity to be in here. So the product from 1 to 0, so the empty product, the product with empty numbers of terms in a group is always going to mean the identity of the group. Okay? So if I take a product over an empty set, I mean the identity. That's a very convenient convention. So it's concordial in some sense. It's compatible with everything. So you follow the convention in some sense. The empty product is always. Okay. So the group just. So what does that mean here? It means that to make the group generated by a set, you write down. You're going to have to write down all the possible products that you can make with the elements of the set and the inverse of the elements of the set. So I'm saying the guys that appear here are either an element of the set or the inverse of an element of the set. So let me give an example. Simplest. So let's say we start with a group G, and you take an X is just one element. So let's take the group generated by one thing, right? So you're going to have to make products with, so X is going to be something like all the products Xi, where either Xi is G, or Xi is G. Right? So what are you going to get? You're going to get E, you're going to get G, you're going to get G inverse, you're going to get GG, you're going to get GG, you're going to get anything through that. Right? So this guy is a E, so that's... So these are all the products. So this is the empty product. This is the product of length 1. Right? The product of length 1 has only one term. So it could be either G or the inverse. The product of length 2, you're going to have, probably the length 2, you're going to have to take 2 G's, a G or a G inverse, or 2 G inverse. Okay, and probably the length 3, you're going to get G, 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 and G, G, G inverse, and G, G inverse, G. Let me solve them, and then we'll see that we're going to be hardly redundant. G inverse, G, G, that was 2 G. And 1 G inverse, and then 2 G inverse is 1 G, you're going to get something like this, and then what else is going to be between G, and then 2 G inverse is inverse, and so on. So this is G, so that's redundant. This is also G. Right, because this guy combined to get empty. This is also G. This is G inverse. This is G inverse. This is G inverse. And this is the other one. So this guy is usually abbreviated as G cubed. This guy is usually abbreviated as G to the minus 3. This guy is usually abbreviated as G squared. This is G to the minus 2. So In fact, when you have the group generated by one element, provided this theorem is true, so that it was all the products, what you're going to get is something like the power of the z, right? So the group generated by one element is always, can be written as the collection of all powers of g with n and g. Whereas g to the n is an abbreviation to, well, what does that mean? It means g times g times g n times. If n is positive, it means the identity is n is zero, and it means g inverse minus n times. Next. So this is the usual power of an element. Positive power is just multiplied by the element at any time. Negative power is just the absolute value of the exponent that they can either check. Right? So, and it's clear that all the problems that we can make with g and g inverse, right? You just, you know, every time you have a g and g and a g inverse together, they cancel out. So you can, as long as there is a g and a g inverse, you can make them both disappear. So at the end, you're either going to end up with all g's or with all g's. Right? Okay, let me prove this here. So I haven't actually proved this. Maybe I can prove it. So that a subgroup that contains that so let me call this guy H. So first of all, H contains X, right? Because the products with one of length one are the elements of X on their image. So. Right. Okay. So it's a subgroup. So the first thing is that H contains X. The second is I'm going to show you that. Okay. Now A is a subgroup of G. So let's prove this. So what do we have to prove? We have to prove it's not empty. Well, E is an H. Even if... So what's the group generated by the empty set? That's E, right? X is an empty set, the only thing that you have there is empty product. Yeah, but still, E is an H. So by definition, by the our convention that the empty product is there. Is an H. So A is not empty. And we can check. So if you have an element of H times the inverse of our... So, remember, there was this shortcut to prove that a subset is a subgroup. You have to check that an element of a subset times the inverse of an element of a subset is an element of a subset. So, I wanted to write this thing, which is an element of H times the inverse of an element of H, as an element of A. So as a product of elements of X and its inverse. So how am I going to do that? Well, this is a product.
Alright, so the inverse of a product is the product of the inverses but written backwards. Okay?
That's easy to see, right? Because if you have a product of an inverse and you invert everybody and reverse, you know, things will sort of cancel successively in the middle. So what is this? This is the product of J from 1 to M of Y M minus J in. M plus 1 minus A, yes. So you have to start at M and J plus 1, M plus 1 plus J. And those guys there is a product of length M plus M, where every term is either, so here is the XI and YJ are in M. Okay, so it's a subgroup. It contains X. And also, if H prime is a subgroup of G, which contains X. Let's think about that for a second. If you have a subgroup of G that contains X, you're going to have to contain all the products of elements of X, and they're even, right? Then, because it's a subgroup, then H prime contains the X inverse X in X. Right, because it's a subgroup. So it contains all products made from elements of X and then X inverse. That is H, so H contains X. What have I shown? I've shown that A contains X, H is a subgroup, and H is contained inside any subgroup containing X. So H is the smallest subgroup of G containing X.
So it's possible to be the component of X.
That's the proof. We just make a word of caution about this thing. So in that very simple way, you take, you know, the example, the first example there when you take group generated by one element, it's very simple how to write them down. But if you already take group generated by two elements, then you're going to get E, X, Y, X inverse, Y inverse, you're going to get X squared, XY, YX, Y squared, X, YX inverse,
XY inverse,
XY inverse,
Y inverse X.
Y inverse X. Y squared. Have I listed all the products of length 2?
No.
No, what is this? X inverse Y inverse. And Y inverse X inverse.
X negative 2, Y inverse.
X negative 2, Y negative 2, thank you. Huh? I added the Y squared twice, thank you. And that's all. So, you wouldn't want to write down all the problems of three terms, right? Because it would be a lot. And if you don't know anything else in all the groups, you know, there is no relation between X and Y, and that's something that I make formal pretty soon. We're going to be talking about three groups, where the group is, you know, they have elements that, you know, there is, you know, there's some groups combined, but I don't know, X, you know, group is commutative, then X, Y is going to be equal to Y, X. And a lot of these things are going to simplify. But, you know, if you don't know that a group is commutative, you can't simplify. So, it gets out of hand pretty quickly. That's the point I'm trying to make. That, you know, when you take the group directed by one element, which is called strictly groups, by the way, then, you know, you're just looking at powers, and that's very easy to list. But when you're talking about groups generated by more than one element, just listing them out, you know, you get put the out of hand. So we'll avoid listing them all out of hand, right? And argue a bit more conceptually about it. But, let A, B, and G be a group, and A is a subgroup of G. We define for G in G, we define a set GA. Collection of all from G fixed and then I vary little A in H, so I'm going to take all of them. And I'm also going to define this other guy here. So this is called the left quartet. H and G, and this is called the right quartet. The G is called a quartet leader. A quartet leader, but not B quartet leader.
Okay, so let me give an example. So let's take G to G R2. The reals. And let me take A to B the diagonal.
There's G and here.
So you can, for example, you can take the coset. So I change the notation from plus times to plus because of the operation here is plus. So let's look at this guy. So this is what? This is the adding one, so this is going to be the 1, 0 plus x. This is just 1 plus x, x. So it's x plus y plus 1. So you go through the line. So this is h.
So this is going to contain the point 1, 0.
H plus 1 plus 1.
You can check that, for example, this is going to be a plus minus 1, 0.
And I'm writing for that on the left, on the right. So they both act on the line parallel to the data. Okay? So it should be clear. Take any point on the plane, the coset containing that point is the line in the plane parallel to the diagonal back into that. Okay. So this example already illustrates many things about cosets which are important. So first of all is that but that they have more than one coset leader, right? Any element, in fact, any element of the coset is there. Right? So, in this example, if you take any point on the line, parallel to that, coset leader, take that to the coset leader, you get the thing. And the second thing is that the different cosets are actually disjoint. So two you don't get two lines that meet, right? The cosets are parallel lines.
I'm sorry.
So age itself is a concept, right? Age itself is a concept. You know, if you put the concept here to be identity, then the concept generated by the identity is age. And with the concept generated by any element of age, it's going to be a consequence of this. Again, second direction. If C and C prime are concepts, of A and B, then either C equals C prime or intersect C prime is empty. So if two concepts meet, that is again. Okay, so that's the two parts of the thing, yes? Then it's true for both left and both right. And if you start mixing, then you can't say anything. In fact, you know, you should be talking only about left concepts or only about right concepts. Because as we'll see later, when in the non-commutative case, it's often the case that left concepts are the same as right concepts. So if you start mixing them, it's easier. Okay, so how do we prove that? Let's prove one. This thing is fairly easy, but it's just a matter of going about the right way. So if you have a left cosec, so C is from genoid A, right? This is the left cosec. So suppose you take a, so if G is in C, then G is equal to G naught A naught, right? If A is not in A, so I want to show that C is indeed, so what is G H? It's a collection of G H, H, and H. But an element of H, so I'd like to write it as a G naught times an element of H. I can write G so G is G naught H naught, but it's G naught H naught H and H. So this is certainly inside G naught H. And conversely is the same because you have G naught is G A G is not in, right? So you can look at G naught H is equal to G naught H H in H is equal to G A naught interest H, right? H in H. So this
So the multiples of G, if you like,
by arms of A, are the multiples of A not.
So multiples you're not, but you can't.
Would by A divided by A not. In transfer from G to G.
The same trick does part two, right? So part two, right, if the scene that C prime is not empty, then say that say G C G H and C prime is C prime H, then so there's an element that is in both of them. So there exists a H prime in H, such that the element represented by G H from C is the same as the element represented by G prime H prime. That's right. So if it's not empty, it means that there is some element in the intersection. So the element in C is going to have to be represented in this form, and the element in, or the gifts of calling H naught. Right? Right? And the element in C prime is going to be represented in this form. And then you go, I don't know, C is GH, H is equal to, so I'm going to rewrite this as, whatever. G is G prime, H naught prime, H naught inverse. Right? So this is G prime, H naught prime, H naught inverse H with H and H. And the point is that this guy is an element of H because H is a subgroup.
Can I just use one?
Yes, because
there is a mutual.
Yes. Right. So you can just use one because see if the coin is not empty, then yeah, so G prime, A prime is in C, which implies that C is G prime, H prime, A, that's what he's saying, by one. That's a better way of doing it. And then you have to say, well, this is equal to, this guy is equal to, so then you have to say, well, this is an element of this direction. G prime is not prime, is an element of C prime as well. So, no, G prime is an element of that cosec, right? So you can multiply by H naught prime units. Also, H naught G prime, H naught prime belongs to G prime A. So, G prime is equal to, okay. So we don't need to do this math down here. But this math also works, right? Because this is an element of A, so this side. You prime, you know, just get that. The two. So I don't even need this much. So I don't need this. So I don't need
this. This is
the
two.
Huh? I mean two, yes. You're using one proof. The proof of one is over there.
Yeah, so there's some element.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing here. So So how am I going
to do that? This one makes it a direct
right. So just call it C. Then it's equal to CH. They're both equal to CH. They're both equal to CH.
Huh?
C, so call the element in the intersection C. Then C is equal to CH. Then C times is equal to CH.
You have that
for
here. So yes.
This one C is in... If it's the drawing, then C belongs to C, implies that C is CH, C belongs to C prime, implies C prime is CH.
That's the best way to do it, okay? So what am I doing? I'm using one, right? Using one here.
And 3 is all prepared to write, you know, to write G, H equals G prime, A prime, just moving on. I'll use the class 3 for this.
Right, so... Now the one thing I want to take out from this theorem right now is the fact that the cosets are disjoint, a piwise disjoint, and every element of the group is in some coset, right? So the coset
of A is in the last coset.
Let me make a comment. Every time I say coset, and don't specify it, do mean last coset, okay? So, coset. So I want to say right coset, I'll say right coset. So if you don't have that's the right in the coset of A and B are disjoint, pairwise disjoint, and distinct coset. And cover G. Right? Because since G belongs to an A, right? The identity is always an A, so G is always an element of GH. So the coset covers the whole of the group, like the parallel lines, the lines parallel to the diagonal cover the fact. So that's what's called the partition of C, right? You've seen this before. Every time you have a set broken up into disjoint subsets, you have a partition. And every time you have a partition, you have an equivalence relation. So we can define and define an equivalence relation. Thank you.
huge problem. Definitely one problem. Yeah, we'll do that. Alright. So, those of you who may have come in a little bit late, I'm assigning homework, is over there, and I'm also fixing the date of the meeting.